This is Pirate Party Radio, episode number 3 for Thursday, November 12, 2009. This week, the MPAA wants everybody to buy new DRM-laced televisions. Britain is now keeping DNA records of unconvicted citizens, and a woman is harassed for unlicensed singing to herself.
The current context is one where copyright now reaches across the spectrum of ways in which we engage in our culture. Here's Lippman again. 90 years later, U.S. copyright law is even more technical, inconsistent, and difficult to understand. More importantly, it touches everyone and everything. Technology, heedless of law, has developed modes that insert multiple acts of reproduction and transmission, potentially actionable events under the copyright statute, into commonplace daily transactions. Most of us can no longer spend even an hour without colliding with copyright law.
We are under siege. They are doing everything they can to prevent progress, to prevent the spread of culture, and to prevent privacy as we know it. The only way to stop this is to unite. This is definitely a global movement. It's continuing to spread across the world like wildfire. We are seeing the birth of a new global political power. There's no way to control the information. There's no way to control culture, control knowledge. And those who control culture and knowledge control the world. And that is losing its last controls. People don't understand how big this really is.
I'm James O'Brien, and welcome to Pirate Party Radio. Make sure you check out the Pirate Party Radio forums for links for all the news stories that are going to be mentioned during the show. We got some feedback from last show. This one is regarding the Media Police story I relayed about the concert that I went to last week at the Skinny Puppy concert. This one is from Mental Nick, and he says, I heard the second episode, and that first story pissed me off. Bands don't give a fuck about pictures, and it's the fucking record companies. Ask any band, they don't even care about pirating music, except maybe for Metallica. This is ridiculous. Thank you, Mental Nick. And this one's from Anonymous regarding the Media Police story that I relayed last time as well. I have somewhat of a unique perspective. I've been the Media Police and didn't like it. I don't do it anymore, but I worked as concert security for 6 years, from April 2003 to June 2008. During that time, I worked at least two events a week. During the summer, it was closer to six or seven nights a week. What you described is quite normal during recent years. It wasn't always that way, but approximately from 2005 onwards, bands have been weird about people sharing their concert experiences. To be clear, the security company doesn't make the policy. There's a chain of command. The band gives its orders to the production company. The production company hires everyone from the caterers to the sound techs to the security team. Sometimes the bands are vegetarian and that needs to be taken care of. Sometimes the band doesn't want any cameras. In the case of Skinny Puppy, both would apply. The busiest production company is Live Nation, formerly known as the House of Blues, who also owns the Commodore Ballroom in Vancouver. After that is media giant Clear Channel. They're astronomically huge companies, but they don't make the rules either. The artists do. I've been at the events where the band, Our Lady Peace comes to mind, changed the rules during the event, and we had to obey, because that's who we're working for. I think Skinny Puppy is shooting itself in the foot, and would sell more tickets if people were free to record and share their experiences. I think there should be boycotts against organized for all bands that treat their fans this way. There are a few exceptions where a no-camera policy is helpful. If the entertainer has epilepsy, flash photography might be a bad idea, for example. I've worked at least one large concert where this was an issue, not very many. If I didn't think it was serious, which most of the time, I'd pretend not to see the cameras in the audience. My attitude was, who are they hurting? I'm sure most of the more zealous guards are not very experienced. A lot of concert work took place during punk rock concerts, usually at the Croatian Cultural Center. There, if you paid too much attention to things that didn't matter, you might miss a body of a crowd surfer flying through the air and straight towards you. Or you might miss the chance to take a break and conserve your energy. I've also worked at a movie premieres as security supervisor and or team leader. It was our job to stop people from bringing cameras, including cell phone cameras, into the theater. I personally think it was ridiculous, but we were hired to do a job. Before the movie started, the security team had to post anti-piracy signs, and we had to verbally explain what would happen if they were caught with a camera inside the theater. It never happened, but we would have to take it from them, erase all the media, and ask them to leave the theater. I had night vision goggles supplied by the security company, but didn't use them. I thought it was too much, and I wanted to watch the show. Thank you from Anonymous. I just left his name out just because of the details that he gave. So thank you very much. This next email, incoming messages from Ryan. The message is, you spoke about the government being able to get your emails via warrant. Our free email providers like Facebook, where if you clearly delete it, it stays floating around the database somewhere. If I wanted a preferable free alternative to Gmail and Yahoo that doesn't record my emails, what would you suggest? And I said, well, there are a couple of things that you can do to help this situation. One is to host an email server on your own computer at home that is only accessible to you, such as in your place of residence where they would need a search warrant to come in your house. Unfortunately, the downside of this is that most ISPs will limit what you can host or what can be sent to or from your home system. And usually email is one of the first ones to go due to spam from compromised home computers. Also, you have to assume that the person sending the email to you or getting the email from you has not taken the same precautions. So a second option is to encrypt all your email, and then you have the option of using a public service email client service like Gmail. But you'll have to check with your country's laws about encryption, as some countries can coerce your encryption keys out of you by threatening jail time and or fines. Also, even if they do that, you can provide an alternate set of keys that give them access to an alternate set of data that will give you plausible deniability. All you have to do is make sure that you legitimately keep up the alternate set of data fresh and updated. So there's some suggestions for you if you are concerned about people, the government, or whoever investigating and be able to get your email from your ISP without a warrant or without even knowing get them getting it because they're not being served to you. And I went over that last show. And I've got an opinion piece from myself here. I own a couple of 7th generation video game systems, the Wii and the Xbox 360, and own a number of games for each of them. And I'm also a collector of 2nd generation video game consoles such as Atari 2600, 5200, 7600, Intellivision 1 and 2, Coleco, and have hundreds of games for them. The Atari 2600 games I pop in the video console from 30 years ago still work. But would you be able to say the same thing about WiiWare, Xbox Live Marketplace, or the Steam games you're downloading today? I've been extremely hesitant to purchase any games through these online methods, as many DRM-laden servers have been shut down, such as the online music stores offered by Walmart, Yahoo, and MSN. These shutdowns have disabled all the music that have been bought through those systems, and the customers who have bought them were out of luck, stuck with files that no longer play. Some of the online offerings have promised to unlock games from the DRM if they ever shut down the servers, but how much can you really trust a company when they're going out of business to bother offering an olive branch as they go under? And how do you people out there feel about the changing face of games, music, and movies to the digital realm of DRM? Will you continue to purchase such things knowing that you never really own them? Because when you buy games through these systems, you're really only paying for a temporary license to privately use the media for a limited portion of time. Also, our torrent sites are the new libraries of the 21st century, saving our culture from the corporate server shutdowns. Are the pirates of this age saving media for future generations in the face of infinitely extending copyrights? And let me know what you think about this, because I'm very hesitant to buy these games through these services that you can buy them through. And you download them from the service, but they have to check in every time you play them to make sure you're still allowed to have them. And if their service shuts down, they check in and you're not allowed to play them. And also, you can't back them up either. They're on your hard drive or they're on a card, and there's permanently attached to the ID of your console, say your Wii or your Xbox 360. So if you tried to put them on another Xbox 360, it doesn't work. You have to check in with the original company and get them reauthorized. Now, this doesn't happen on one of those old consoles. You can buy a cartridge from one place and a game system from another, and you can put it together, slap it on your TV, and play it right away. This is not how it's going to be 30 years from now, like it is with the Atari 2600. You're not going to have any of these games you're going to be able to play anymore unless you bought a disc for it. And the ones I buy are only on discs, because I want to possibly play them in the future. If it's a good game now, it should be a good game in the future. Let's go on to the news. Murdoch may block Google searches. Rupert Murdoch says he will try and block Google from using news content from his companies. The billionaire told Sky News Australia he will explore ways to remove stories from Google search indexes, including Google News. Mr. Murdoch's news company had previously said it would start charging online customers across all its websites. He believes that search engines cannot legally use headlines and paragraphs of news stories as search results. There's a doctrine called fair use, which we believe to be challenged in the courts and would bar it altogether, Mr. Murdoch told TV Channel, but we'll take that slowly. Mr. Murdoch announced earlier this year that the websites of his news websites, that's awkward, as websites of his news websites would begin charging for access. The target had been all its sites to be charged by June next year, but indications are now that it's unlikely. News Corp owns Time and Sun newspapers in the UK and the New York Post and Wall Street Journal in the US. Newspapers across the world are considering the best ways to make money from the internet, particularly in a time of falling advertising revenues. The risk is that charges may alienate readers who have come to become used to free content and deter advertisers. So Mr. Murdoch is taking a very brave step for his company and not being indexed by Google News, which I use personally, and I know a lot of other people use to look up their news, the basic news headlines, which would point them to their site. They should be encouraging this so that people can find their website on there and be the best article. I know that a lot of the articles on the internet are just copycats of, you know, the Associated Press release that's put out, and you do a search on Google News, and you'll find hundreds of exactly the same worded news. So what he should do is encourage his newspaper to be unique and find news stories that other people don't find, so that when Google is linked to your website, you're providing a fresh look on news and not the same stale rehash that other news organizations are copying from the Associated Press. In privacy news, Justice Department asks for news sites visitors list. This is from CBSNews.com. In a case that raises questions about online journalism and privacy rights, the U.S. Department of Justice sent a formal request to an independent news site ordering it to provide details of all reader visits on a certain day. The grand jury subpoena also required the Philadelphia-based IndieMedia.us website not to disclose the existence of this request unless authorized by the Justice Department, a gag order that presents an unusual quandary for any news organization. Christina Clare, a 34-year-old new Linux administrator living in Philadelphia who provides free service space for IndieMedia.us, said she was shocked to receive the Justice Department's subpoena. The Independent Media Center is a left-of-center amalgamation of journalists and advocates that, according to their principles of unity and mission statement, work towards promoting social and economic justice and social change. The subpoena from U.S. Attorney Tim Morrison in Indianapolis demanded all IP traffic to and from Indymedia.us on June 25, 2008. It instructed Claire to include IP addresses, times, and any other identifying information, including email addresses, physical addresses, registered accounts, and Indymedia readers' social security numbers, bank account numbers, credit card numbers, and so on. I didn't think anything we were doing was worthy of any federal attention, Claire said in a telephone interview with CBSNews.com on Monday. After talking to other Indymedia volunteers, Claire ended up calling the EFF in San Francisco, which represented her at no cost. Under long-standing Justice Department guidelines, subpoenas to members of the news media are supposed to receive special treatment. One portion of the guidelines, for instance, says that no subpoena may be issued to any member of the news media without the express authorization of the Attorney General. That would be the current Attorney General, Eric Holder. And subpoenas should be directed at material information regarding a limited subject matter. So this is a good wake-up call to website sysadmins to not retain data that is not integral to the security of your site. Keeping data private should be a concern for everyone. So everybody out there, keep it limited, keep the logs limited to what you really need, and not risk yourself. Be open to this kind of scrutiny for no specific reason. There's no need for to drag your readers into this kind of litigation that are doing nothing but reading the news. In free culture news, Swedes scramble to join new online movie service. This is from thelocal.se. A new service for watching movies over the internet for free has attracted more than 250,000 Swedes since its launch 2 years ago, 2 weeks ago, sorry. In addition to signing up tens of thousands of subscribers in a matter of days, the company responsible for the service, Vodler, recently inked licensing deals to two major Hollywood studios, Walt Disney Company and Paramount, giving its users access to thousands of film titles. Founded in Stockholm 2005, Vodler offers users streaming on-demand videos free of charge. When it released a beta version of its technology in June, the service attracted 16,000 users on the first day. Vodler launched an updated version of the service in late October, inviting customers of Swedish internet service provider Bredbandsbolaget to sign up. The launch was very, very successful in terms of how the service has been received in the press and in terms of response from the public. He said Vodler now has 70,000 registered users, as well as a queue of more than 200,000 people who have requested an invitation to join the service. We're adding about 3,000 users a day. Often dubbed Spotify for movies, referring to another Swedish-based service for digital music distribution, Vodler aims to provide a legal alternative to file-sharing pirated films that still allows customers to chance to watch whatever they want, whenever they want, for little or no cost. While Vodler isn't the only company in Sweden offering streaming movies over the internet, it has one very important difference from its competitor. We're the only service offering movies for free, said Slavik. He explained that Vodler believes that file sharing and internet piracy have changed consumer habits to the point where many expect to be able to see movies online without paying for them. Free online movies are the way of the future, he said. That Vodler's approach helps penny-pinching movie lovers avoid the risks associated with downloading pirated films. Now, in my opinion, it's never too little too late. This is a great idea. People are fickle and can change their habits. All you have to do is offer something that is more appealing than is what is currently out there, and what is currently out there is free. People can get movies, all the movies they want, for free with a tiny little bit of work, installing a torrent piece of torrent software, and going to a torrent search site and connecting to a torrent. Now, this service that he's offering makes it that much simpler. They've made this free and accessible with commercials at the beginning of the movie. This is definitely a step in the right direction. It should have been done a long time ago by the major studios. This follows in the footsteps of over-the-air television and over-the-air radio, where things are presented for free. They show movies. They play music. And they have commercials in between the music and movies. This is exactly the model that they're going after that has been around for decades, half a century or more. Unfortunately, like on most online streaming offerings, it's limited by region. So only it's only offered in Sweden right now and has not branched out. And I realize that they do this to be able to target market its advertising, because in Canada or the US, we'll tune in and watch it, we'll get a bunch of advertising for Swedish products that aren't even offered here. So that kind of advertising would be irrelevant to us, waste our time, and waste the advertisers' time. But they should really get this going quickly to be able to capture that market that already exists for people wanting access to movies for free that they can get by other means, that is putting no money into the MPAA and RIAA's pockets, and for that matter, the artists' pockets. In copyright news, tell the FCC to say no to the cable kill switch. This is from publicknowledge.org. The Motion Picture Association of America has asked the Federal Communications Commission for permission to engage in selectable output control, the SOC. Hopefully we won't hear that acronym very long. But if the FCC agrees, the MPAA and the movie studios it represents, Paramount, Sony, Fox, Universal, Disney, and Warner Brothers, would be able to turn off any output plug they choose, like those on the back of consumer electronic devices on an entertainment system, during special video-on-demand movies on cable television. Public Knowledge opposes SOC along with the Consumer Federation of America, Digital Freedom Campaign, EFF, Media Access Project, New American Foundation, USPIRG, and has filed comments urging the FCC to deny MPAA's requests. And this is what they said. If you use a TiVo, any Slingbox, or TV manufacturer before 2004, or connect your TV to your cable box with analog cables, or have a TV without a digital connection such as HDMI, you will likely have to replace much, if not all, of your existing entertainment system to watch these movies. Now, why would the movie studios want to do that? Right now, the MPAA and movie studios let you rent a video-on-demand movie on cable only after it's come out on DVD. They won't release the movies to VOD earlier because they're afraid they won't make any money from DVD sales if people can copy the movie at home. If you're making copies in order to watch them at a different place or time, like on a TV or a Slingbox, this is a legal kind of copying. So it is making short copies to educate, poke fun at, or criticize. You can make copies at home for personal use by using analog outputs because they don't have copy protection on them. However, most digital plugs like HDMI do have copy protection. The MPAA wants to make sure that if they give you the privilege of watching a movie at home, that you won't copy it and replace a purchase the DVD. That doesn't make sense there, but the SOC turns off the analog outputs and only lets you use the plugs with copy protection. The MPAA has made assurances that cable companies will warn its customers that certain cable channels can only be viewed if you have the correct equipment, but they have been very vague about how they will do this. That doesn't sound so bad. I just watch movies. I don't write reviews or make copies. The MPAA's request is so vaguely written that it would allow them to turn off all other plugs on your cable box. Then you would have to buy a new TV with an MPAA-approved output plug if you want to watch movies on demand before they come out on DVD. Although this sounds like an incredibly silly idea, Sony released a product last year that lets you watch movies, internet movies, on your television. Last month they announced that you can watch Hancock on video on demand distributed over the internet before it comes out on DVD. The only way to receive this content is through a Sony internet device. It connects to a special plug only available on a Sony TV. Sony is a studio member and a member of the MPAA. We think that when you pay for a movie, you should be able to watch it on any TV you want on your device of your choice. It's fundamentally wrong for somebody to tell you when, where, and how you watch it. So that was from publicknowledge.org, if you want to check that out. And consumers are getting more and more locked down each year with their equipment for no reason at all. The movie studios seem to be stuck in a mindset that it's the 1980s and people are making mixtapes of movies and sharing it with their friends. They think it's the average consumer that's their nemesis. It's not the average consumer. They can try and throw as many copyright restrictions as they want at the equipment or the media, but the video and audio will still be able to be copied. If you can see it or hear it, you can copy it. All this does is push the costs onto the average consumer to pay more and more elaborate and ultimately futile copy protection schemes that has not once been thwarted by the distribution of media online. Imagine how many more movies that consumers could purchase if all the copy protection R&D and added electronics on the equipment were not a requirement every time you wanted to watch the latest comedy at home. Imagine a world where you didn't have to constantly see little brown watermark spots appear on the screen in the theater while the employees watch you with night vision goggles like prison guards. Imagine a world where you aren't forced to sit through cheesy ads telling you not to pirate the movie you just paid $20 for as you mash the skip button fruitlessly. If you could imagine a world where companies treated you as customers rather than criminals, then we wouldn't have to dream up alternative places to go find our media rather than from you. In privacy news, Britain is to hold DNA of innocence for 6 years. And this was posted by Anthony in the PPCA forums. This is from CBC.ca. Britain said Wednesday it plans to keep DNA profiles of innocent people for at least 6 years instead of indefinitely, despite a European court ruling branding the retention as a violation of human rights. The DNA of terror suspects, people who aren't necessarily accused of terrorism, could be held indefinitely. Britain has one of the largest DNA databases in the world, with more than 4.5 million profiles in file, larger than that of the United States. I believe that the proposals that I am announcing today represent the most proportionate approach to DNA retention, Home Secretary Alan Johnson said. He said the proposals will ensure the database continues to help tackling crime. The Home Office said that it proposed to remove the DNA profiles of all adults arrested, but not charged or convicted of any recordable offense after 6 years. The proposals came after European Court of Human Rights ruled unanimously last year that keeping DNA samples and fingerprints was a violation of the right to privacy. This protection is guaranteed under the Human Rights Convention, which Britain has signed. The court also criticized Britain's use of blanket and indiscriminate storage. More than 1 million DNA samples have come from people who are never charged with a crime or were acquitted. Many of the samples were taken from juveniles. Rights groups criticized the government's decision, arguing that it violates the spirit of the court's ruling. To hold your DNA for 6 years, we think, is disproportionate, said Anna Fairclough, a DNA expert at the civil rights group Liberty. She said the proposal will likely face opposition when it goes to the parliament. If it is passed, it will result inevitably in more litigation, she added. The government said that DNA data is essential for fighting crime and providing justice for victims. The Home Office said that between April 1998 and September 2009, there were more than 410,000 crimes with DNA matches, providing the police with leads on the identities of the offenders. Clearly, the system is giving the police quite a lead with the possible identity of offenders, Prime Minister Gordon Brown's spokesman Simon Lewis said. So in the continuation of Gattaca 1984 style that's going on in Britain, they're now keeping personal bio-identification on innocent people in a step towards a panopticon of information on its population. Besides video cameras watching your every move, they're now working towards a complete database of your identity, providing cradle-to-grave surveillance on where you've been and what you've done. This seems to be stepping way too far in the direction of the old saying, if you've done nothing wrong, then you have nothing to worry about. And this one, next one, was sent in by DC. Anti-piracy group responds to media, not DRM breaker. This is from torrentfreak.com. This week, a man reported himself to an anti-piracy group, confessing to breaking the DRM on more than 100 movies and TV shows in an attempt to draw attention to unhelpful copyright laws. Now, the anti-piracy group has taken the time to respond, not yet to the man in question, but to the press. Frustrated Danish citizen Henrik Andersen reported himself to the anti-piracy outfit Antipiratgruppen for breaking the DRM on more than 100 legally purchased DVD movies and TV shows for use on his media center. As the law is today, you cannot have a media center without breaking the law, he told Torrent Freak. When I think of a media center, it is a place where you have all your movies, pictures, and music together. You can only do this by having a digital copy of the movie. Henrik told us that he has taken this action to draw attention to laws which allow him to copy DVDs for his own personal use, but forbid him to remove the DRM in order to do so. In his confession, he has asked Antipiratgruppen for a response by December 1st, indicating if they are prepared to take action against him. The group has announced that Henrik will indeed get a response, but didn't tell him directly, instead preferring to comment via the press. It is a political matter, but we have sent it to the Association of Danish Video Distributors so that they can consider it. But Henrik Andersen will get a reply by 1st of December, said the lawyer Thomas Schulter to Common. Schulter went on to say that proving this type of infringement is usually impossible. Unless people confess, which he did, then it is impossible to prove they have broken any copy protection. We cannot break down people's doors, to people's homes and explore what they have available on their media server, he said. But I bet he wish he could. Paul Dilov, director for Warner Brothers Denmark, a chairman at the Association of Danish Video Distributors, said that they will have a meeting next week whether to decide whether to report this matter to the police and therefore have egg on their face and drag themselves into an embarrassing court case. Dilov added that they have not previously encountered a similar event and consider the confession to be a media event, an assessment with which Henrik agrees. Well, yes, he's trying to drag this out into the public so that it exposes the ridiculousness that copyright is going to. Of course, until now, the film industry has not met the attentions of the law, and the culture minister will not force the film industry to allow copying by removing DRM by changing the law. And then there must indeed be an awareness of the problem through the media, he explains. But the whole problem lies in the sense with the Minister of Culture, who does not follow its own interpretation of the law as the intentions of it. This gives the film industry an easy ride to the detriment of consumers, he added. All will be revealed here or on before December 1st. Now, this is a brave, brave person to do this in the face of possible punishment that he might face. He made a very public stand on an obvious non-commercial use of purchased media to make a point in how far the pendulum on copyright laws have swung to criminalizing everyday use of purchased media. This enforces the idea that media content providers are not selling you a product. They're selling you an extremely limited temporary viewing license upon which the media that you have purchased. Even legitimate uses that does not take money out of the pocket of the media licensors that they so commonly trot out in their commercials, in the movie theaters, and in front of DVDs, saying that you're stealing from them if you make copies. This is a completely legitimate use of it, and I wish him luck on this, and hopefully we'll hear a follow-up to this story. Copyright group apologizes to unlicensed grocery clerk singer. This is from ZeroPaid.com. It's no secret that royalty-collecting groups have been doing all they can to drum up business by hounding restaurants, cafes, gyms, waiting areas, business office, and just about any other place they can think of where music could be performed publicly for others to hear. PRS for Music, a UK-based royalty-collecting group for music writers, composers, and publishers, is just such a group and managed to go overboard in threatening 56-year-old Sandra Burt, a supermarket grocery clerk. She warned earlier this year that she needed a license if she was to play music where customers might be able to hear. Undeterred, she dumped the radio and began singing aloud. She said, I would start to sing to myself when I was stacking the shelves, just to keep me happy because it was very quiet without the radio, she told the BBC. When I heard that the PRS said that I would be prosecuted for not having a performance license, I thought it was a joke and started laughing. I was then told I could be fined thousands of pounds, but I couldn't stop myself singing. News of the affair made the headlines across UK and made the PRS for music look more like the PRS for greed. It eventually led the group to apologize to Mrs. Burt and send her flowers to express their regret for getting in the public news, not the regret for going after her. Though, through it all, it still maintains a position that singing in public and playing a radio while stacking store shelves require they be paid a fee. So it's only when the plight of a 56-year-old grocery clerk make the news do they reconsider their efforts. It ought to do so more often, especially when its own economist said recently that the overall music revenue is up 4.7% since 2007. And this is another story of copyrights gone wild. We're being fined for what we sing. The lockdown on popular culture has gone too far, much too far. Sean Kennedy, another radio broadcaster, once asked facetiously in a situation where a father is reading a book to his child before bed, Daddy, are you licensed to tell me that bedtime story? I can see a day when the RIAA and MPAA will drum up the courage to implement a mandatory listener's license. They'll use the excuse that media is so pervasive in our culture that people are bound to incur copyright infractions on a daily basis. And to simplify things, everyone will be charged a blanket yearly fee to access media. There will be bronze and silver and gold accounts. And of course, you'll need to show your gold account to attend any concerts or karaoke bars. But don't worry, you only have to get a bronze account to be able to sing in public. And in open government news, this is from the EFF.org, a big win for telecom lobbying documents battle, government to turn over some records this week. EFF has big news in our long-running Freedom of Information Act battle over telecom lobbying documents. The U.S. government will finally release some additional records this week. This case started back in 2007 as Congress debated granting immunity to the telecommunications companies that participated in illegal government electronic surveillance. News reports detailed an extensive and expensive lobbying strategy in support of the controversial immunity proposals, and EFF wanted to know more. So we used the Freedom of Information Act to ask for information about the behind-the-scenes negotiations with the Department of Justice, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, Congress, and telecom lobbyists. As you may remember, the government has fought for months to withhold many of these documents, arguing that they are protected by a number of Freedom of Information Act exemptions, including those covering agents, deliberations, and other privileged communications. Last month, a district court ordered the agencies to turn over additional documents, a decision that the government has been considering whether to appeal. But on Friday, the government reported to the appeals court that it has finally given up the fight over a significant portion of the records, including communications between agencies and Congress about amendments to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. We expect to receive the documents later this week, and we'll post them on the website as soon as we can after that. The government has said it will continue to try to block the additional information, including communications within the executive branch and records reflecting the identities of telecoms that lobbied for immunity. EFF will, of course, fight these efforts in court. In the meantime, we'll look forward to this week's document release and hope you will help us search through them for an important information about the telecom lobbying campaign. It's good to see that the EFF is always vigilant in the fight for what we should all already be accessible to the people of the United States, and especially for revealing those telecom communication companies that just rolled over without a fight, giving the American government whatever they wanted, whenever they asked for it. And now, soon, hopefully, the American public will soon know which telecommunications company to choose in the future. when considering changing their service. Now in Pirate Party news, make sure you visit consumersforinternetcompetition.com, as there's only 29 more days to voice your concern about the recent CRTC decision on net neutrality in Canada. So this applies to Canadians, and I don't know if they'll take opinions from people in the United States and also overseas, but you can take a look at that website to see what's going on in Canada and voice your concerns. And in the free music and media section, this was sent in by DC, and there's an excerpt at the top of the show. And this is from Lawrence Lessing. That's on Blip TV. You can go down, watch the whole thing. It's titled, "It's About Time, Getting Our Values Around Copyright." Now, Lawrence Lessing is great. If you've never heard him or read any of his books, I've read a number of his books, and they're excellent. He is very informative on copyright, and he has great ideas on the future of copyright and how to implement a working system. Now, this closing track was sent in by Jay, and this is a free download that you can get of piratey music you might enjoy from the band Abney Park, from abneypark.com. This song at the end of the show is called Airship Pirate, so I hope you enjoy that. And if you have news stories you'd like to hear in the show, submit them through the form on the website at piratepartyradio.com. And if you want links to all the stories that I posted here, just go to piratepartyradio.com and click on forum, and that'll point you to all the news stories, and you can click on them and read along with them for past shows and this show. So until next time, this has been James O'Brien for Pirate Party Radio.
Shots made this good and that for the principle.